Mic'd Up, Our Women Entrepreneurs is brought to you by Scottish Edge and is supported by the Royal Bank of Scotland. More details on Royal Bank of Scotland's accredited support for women in business a little later. Hello everyone and welcome to Mic'd Up with me, Alison Walker. My second podcast series is all about women entrepreneurs succeeding with their businesses here in Scotland. Women from all backgrounds are running all sorts of businesses all over the country, and their stories and their journeys are amazing to hear. In this episode, I'm in Livingston and with Jacine Rutasikwa, who, with her husband Paul, has created Matuga Distillers, the only black-owned distillery in Scotland and one of only two in the UK. But before you think another whiskey distillery or even gin, no, it's rum. They set up in 2015 and the Scottish rum scene has grown considerably since then. Jacine, thank you so much for taking the time to chat, as I know you're very busy. We're inside your world here. This is where the magic happens. Do you call it a distillery, not a factory? Can you just describe to us what we can see around us right now?
Sure. So around us, first of all, we have Paul, my husband, head distiller, and Graham, our production assistant, hard at work. And this is a typical production day. So at the heart of our distillery, we have our 2,000 litre copper pot still. And that is where we produce our Scottish rum from scratch. We have four fermentation vessels. We have our beautiful collection of casks and barrels, which we've sourced from a range of different brokers and other whiskey distilleries. And we have our bottling line. So we basically produce rum from scratch and manage the entire production process right here in Livingston.
How many staff do you have? How does it work?
So there are four of us in the core of the business. So myself and Paul are co-founders and co-CEOs. Paul is supported by Graham. And we have a...
I can see the liquid going in into the bottle. It seems quite labour intensive, is it?
I mean, there are different ways to get into the rum business. We have chose the first principles approach, which is making rum entirely from scratch. So the raw material, sugarcane molasses, comes in, which we have to import. We do not have sugarcane growing freely in Scotland. So we import our sugarcane molasses from across Africa, from Mozambique, South Africa, Egypt. And once we get the molasses here, we can get going. But it's an intensely, laborious process that we proved that we're up to the task.
Can you take me way back then to 2015, or even, I guess, before that? Because, you know, what was your background leading up to this?
So my background, well, initially was actually broadcast television. So I initially worked for BBC Sport, and it's through BBC Sport that I first got to know Scotland, because I would be up at Murrayfield working on the Six Nations. And
I'm sure I must have bumped into you at some point.
Or I'd be in Glasgow, Kelvin Hall, working on athletics. I moved on from broadcast and I moved into marketing. And directly before, I was working in corporate marketing, primarily B2B marketing in financial services and mining. So very different to my world. Well,
exactly.
Now.
That seems like such a massive jump to something so completely different. That, but then that's usually how it happens. But
So Paul and I met in London. Paul's originally from Uganda. My family's from Jamaica, and we would travel quite often to East Africa, to Uganda, Kenya, and I could never get rum. And I found this so curious, because there's lots of sugarcane in the region, but there's just no rum culture. So actually, when I met Paul, he was a malt head. He was all about fine scotch and whiskey. And my family introduced him to Jamaican-style rums. And we spotted a gap in the market, or I guess an absence. Really, where we could not see Africa showing up in rum, and beyond that, in the world of fine spirits. And we couldn't see representation in terms of, people who look like us, of African Caribbean descent, as leaders and
in the sector. So we had this idea, and it, you know, UK scratch distill rum wasn't even a thing. This is 2014, 2015. We'd seen craft beer, we'd seen craft gin, and we wondered if we could bring that approach to rum. So we found the one distillery in England that had cracked the code and knew how to make rum from scratch. And we began working with that distillery to make our rum. We called our company and brand Latuga. This keeps us rooted to the physical place. There is a town called Latuga in Uganda, and Paul had taken me to the family land in Latuga. And it really is the inspiration behind this whole endeavor, because I was just in the most beautiful, lush space. And it's so magical because Paul's late mother, she was a farmer and she tilled that land. So
was there ever thought to set up there then and build a distillery there?
We did think about that, but it was we didn't have the know-how, and we were living in London, so it just wasn't practical. So we were able to get started in London, working under contract manufacturing, and in October 2015 we launched our rum to the world, Latuga Rum. We launched a smoky golden rum, which we believe was a world first, and it was smoky because of Paul's love of whiskey. So he wanted to make a rum that was for his palate and for connoisseurs like him. He wanted, you know, slightly different character.
Why do you think there was no rum distillery in Scotland? Well, I think there was one, but why do you think rum didn't before you got on the scene, didn't really?
I think it's really about the know-how. And the interesting thing is, you know, since moving to Scotland, we've discovered actually we're the new wave of rum distillers, but Scotland actually has a deep connection to sugar and rum. And Glasgow was a hub of sugar production and rum distilling in the 18th century. It's a little known history that we've kind of been uncovering and sharing, actually. So there is a tradition, and our understanding is that a lot of the techniques for whiskey were actually inherited from, you know, from rum making. So during those times of empire building, as rum was shipped from, for instance, the Caribbean to the UK, there's maturation on the ships. And that really was the beginning of the art of aging, of which whiskey has surely benefited from.
The decision to come to Scotland then to try this out, talk me through that.
So, as I mentioned, our rum was made under contract manufacturing. So we were essentially brand owners, but we always wanted to own the entire process. Paul was a civil engineer, designing highways and bridges. That was his world. But he was also a connoisseur of rum, and he was quite comfortable, even without the technical know-how, explaining the process. You know, he's quite a geek. He'd be happy for me to say that. And, you know, he intimately knew the process, but didn't have the technical or practical knowledge. So we looked at where Paul could learn the art of distilling, and it was Heriot Watt. So Paul got a place on their world-class brewing and distilling program, and that was it. Scotland was calling, Alison. So we made the decision that we were going to move to Scotland with our two young daughters. They were age three.
We've stopped bottling for a minute, just in case anybody's wondering why the noise has stopped. A few more bottles done.
Yeah, done, Graham.
Oh, they're all done now.
Paul secured his place on the brewing and distilling program. We made the decision that we were going to move our family up and have a new life in Scotland. And
that must have been quite a big decision too, though.
It was a big decision, but both Paul and I are quite adventurous. You know, Paul obviously had moved to, he'd actually moved to Leeds from Kampala, where he was born, to study civil engineering. So he's quite comfortable kind of being quite nomadic. I'd lived in the States. But we were very comfortable in London because I have a huge family. We had two young children. So that was a huge challenge in moving up here because, you know, I have such a big family all across South London. And the reaction, you can imagine, you're going to do what?
You're going to Scotland? you're going to set up a distillery? Yeah.
But actually, probably knowing me, they really weren't very surprised.
No.
So it was more just excitement, you know.
Yeah, we
did not know one person in Scotland, but we were moving as a unit, you know, four and I and our two young daughters, and we were ready for the adventure.
And when did you find this particular unit?
So we found a home in Livingston, so that's why Livingston has a rum distillery. And as Paul was pushing our youngest daughter, she would have been about 5 months at the time, in the buggy, walking around, getting familiar with the neighbourhood, he stumbled across the industrial unit very close to our home, the industrial estate. And so it was all very easy for us.
Yeah.
You could say so, Alison. It was close to home, fit for purpose. You know, you wouldn't believe it, but when we first moved in, we were rattling around. This is a just under 4,000 square foot unit here. And we had one table, a 5 litre still, and a big vision. So,
did you find demand straight away? Did you have to go out and sell? What was the reaction of the I suppose hospitality, you know, pubs, restaurants, people? What was the reaction?
So initially, you know, a lot of curiosity and wonder. Rum made in the United Kingdom. Huh? There's no sugar cane. How do you do this? I guess curiosity as to how we are able to make it in the UK. But a lot of openness in terms of trialing. Obviously, as I said, you know, you've seen craft gin, and we were explaining that we're bringing an artisanal approach to rum, and that you can expect some novel characteristics and flavours. And everybody was quite open to trialing. We did have to explain that although we're inspired by Caribbean rums, this is UK made rum, and it's still kind of finding its own identity. And that within that, you know, we had a lot of freedom to experiment, but we were certainly bringing styles of rum that are very atypical to the market. So with that, we've been able to bring, you know, new customers to rum. So with our smoky, complex rums, we're able to bring whiskey drinkers. We actually have a second brand called Live for Livingston.
Live
means life and living.
Yeah, I can see it on the bottle.
So with Matuga, cask age, very complex, high on flavour, high on aroma, we wanted to create a sibling collection which was potentially able to bring newcomers to the category that might not be ready for the full-on flavour of Matuga, because it's...
I asked about reaction from Scotland to having a rum distillery, but what about the reaction to you and being a woman in business, being a black woman in business as well? Did you find that a help or a hindrance, or was it a bit of both, or was neither an issue?
Yeah, I guess... Well, you know, obviously getting into the industry, that was part of our motivation, that we couldn't see anybody that looked like us in a leadership or ownership position in the spirits business in the UK. So I remember being at the London Rum Festival, and a lot of people from, you know, African and Caribbean communities were just, you know, so proud that they could see ownership from people of African and Caribbean heritage. So for myself personally, I've just flourished, I feel. And I think especially coming up to Scotland, which I found to be very open and collegiate, and I found other female leaders within food and drink. So that camaraderie has been very helpful. I'm also mindful that, you know, there aren't many black female distillery owners. I think I may actually be the only one
I think you are
in the United Kingdom, who have a distillery in the United Kingdom at least. But, you know, for my daughters, that's very normal. And for, you know, there will be others that come after, which, you know, means it's, I'm not a blip. It will hopefully be a trend now.
I mean, the passion is obviously there. There's a big difference between following your passion and running a successful business. What about the whole business aspect side of it, the everything to do with employing people, to doing your accounts, to doing, you know, all the admin associated? It's not just about making the rum. Uh-huh. Where did you get that knowledge? Is that just for RBS or Scottish Edge or Business Gateway? What kind of help or advice did you look to? Where did you find it?
I guess between Paul and I, as co-founders, you know, we pretty much share all of the duties. Obviously, Paul's leading in technicals, but he also supports on, you know, financials and admin. But yeah, we've upskilled and got the knowledge that we need. We did the RBS Accelerator Program, which has a fantastic curriculum for entrepreneurs, so certainly got a lot of insights from that. And we've been very good at finding the specialist help that we need. So we have some consultants who support the business and can kind of plug in, you know, where we need some extra advice and support. But yeah, we pretty much run every aspect of the distillery operation, from the admin to the finance, the strategy, the marketing.
Well, marketing is your bag as well.
Yeah,
so
a lot of it's transferable. But my background was B2B. You know, business to consumer is a very different, it's different requirements and requires different approaches and toolkits. So I've had to learn very fast and also find people that can bring more strength in that P2P.
Never be afraid to ask for help.
No,
you know?
Never. And that's what I found in Paul and I found in Scotland, that, as I mentioned, it's so collegiate, so helpful. I mean, we have a WhatsApp group for distillers.
you really do live and breathe this, don't you?
Yeah. And we're not afraid to ask for help, but we're also very giving as well. You know, very focused on giving back. So we run a craft rum school now for Heriot Watt students, so that we can now teach the next generation. And
do they come here?
Yeah, they come here. They have sugar cane, and they try to make spice rum and aged rums. So
real hands-on stuff, isn't
it? Yeah, so Paul's very open in terms of sharing our techniques. We don't give it all away, obviously, but, you know, we want to inspire the next generation, and we want to create a tradition.
Just like whiskey has.
Yeah, we want to create a tradition and legacy.
You talk about the high. What's been the best? What's given you the most joy? Is there a moment or maybe a contract or maybe a... When you got your very special distillery unit in, can you pinpoint some moments on that journey where you thought, yes? No.
I think I've just come back from France, where we do a trade show in Paris with our importer. And I think getting that first export deal was huge for us, because it came at quite an early stage in our journey. And it gave us a lot of confidence, because we've joined a company who are very discerning. They cherry pick their brands. And it was encouraging because they...
When was that, GC?
This was 2016, so we'd not long launched. Mm-hmm. And the founder of the company, the company's called Dugas, discovered us at the London Rum Festival. And he loved everything, just as we are, right? So he loved the atypical rum, he loved our founder story, and that's all that you want, for somebody to embrace, you know, your vision and embrace your company, your ethos, embrace you as founders. I think the second great moment was completing our crowd fundraising campaign. because we were talking earlier about some of the challenges for diverse founders, and the statistics are terrible for Black founders, and then the intersection of, you know, ethnicity and gender compounds the difficulties in raising capital. So there are reports, the British Business Bank did a report, and the data is quite depressing. I mean, it kind of talks about how difficult it is for founders of African Caribbean descent to progress, yeah, you know, and get the resources that we need. So, but we were very focused on our growth. We knew that we had a fantastic business and a very compelling plan for our future. And through crowd fundraising, we found our community of 350, over 350 investors and supporters.
That's amazing.
Who, similar to the importer who saw us, you know, I see you, you know, just as we are.
And were they from all over the UK?
All over the UK, all over the world.
Wow.
Yeah. Who really got behind what we were doing. And that was just an amazing moment. And smashed, you know, we smashed our target. And with their support, we've been able to move to the next phase.
And you got some Scottish Edge funding as well,
yes,
didn't you? How did that come about?
Yeah, so very competitive competition. And it was round 16 that we applied for, and kept getting through to the next rounds, and suddenly in the semi-final and the final. And it was, again, a fantastic win for the category. I think we were the first Scottish rum distillery to succeed in Scottish Edge. So a win for us, a win for the Scottish rum distilling community, and again, helped us to make strategic investment in our growth. And the network has been amazing as well. So fantastic.
And that's what a lot of entrepreneurs say, that talking to other business owners going through similar things is invaluable.
Definitely. And also being able to take a step back, because, you know, businesses like ours, where as co-founders Paul and I are very much in the weeds and in the operation, it's quite difficult to actually have perspective. So being able to take a step back, speak with other people who, you know, may not be in your space but have similar challenges, you know, that camaraderie is really important. And I think that's one of the things I always urge people to just stay connected to others, because you can crawl into a hole with all your challenges and it can just become really, you know, feel impossible to overcome. But once you start speaking and sharing...
So what's going to be the next thing? What's going to be the next stage?
Well, I have to take a deep breath and reflect on this one, but we are now moving into agribusiness, Alison. So having established a rum distillery in Scotland, we are now turning our attention back to Uganda. And we have long held this ambition to start a sugarcane development on our family land in Uganda.
Wow, that's amazing.
So we're going back to Matuga, where this enterprise and adventure began. And as I mentioned, Paul's late mother was a farmer and told the family land in Matuga. And it used to be a sugarcane plantation before it came to the family. Now we are going to start a sugarcane development on the land, which is going to do many things. It's going to help us to grow sugarcane, which can be harvested in due course and processed into molasses and brought over to Grangemouth and up to our distillery to show up in our spirit, which for us is part of our cane to cask mission. But it's also going to help us to support sugarcane growers in the region who having a really tough time. Paul and I have spent time visiting sugarcane factories and sugarcane farmers during our trip to Uganda. So we understand that it's hard for them to make a living with their current model, which is selling their harvest to sugar factories. So what we want to do is help them to get into molasses cultivation and production, and that will help them improve their livelihoods. We have this line, Scottish Craft African Soul, which is really about that duality, but this really kind of dials up on
what's the time scale for that then, do you think?
So within the next 6 to 12 months.
Are you 24/7? Because most people that run their own businesses are. Do you get the chance to switch off a little bit and step back, as you say you do?
We're strict about Sundays.
Good.
But Paul could be distilling on a Saturday. But Sundays is sacred for our family. Paul is head distiller here, but at home he's also head chef. So he makes...
He's very handy, isn't he? He's very useful.
Is he here?
Paul makes an amazing Sunday roast. So, you know, you do what you can. This whole thing of work-life balance, I often say, is it a myth? But you've got to keep trying.
What about the family? What about the extended family in London? Watching from afar and seeing what you've achieved here.
There's so much pride. And not even watching from afar. I mean, 2 weeks ago, I had about 8 of my family members come up for the weekend to celebrate my uncle's 70th. So they came on a tour and they're really...
They had a look around and...
Yeah, they're rooting for us.
What do you think you would tell your younger self, you know, when you were starting out, whatever journey you were on at that point and where you are now, what do you think you would say to that person?
I think
as a woman and as a black woman succeeding in business, and you know, from that standpoint to way back.
Yeah, I think one of the things that we talk about is you know, claiming this whole notion of claiming your seat at the table, you know, what that might take to arrive finally, where you're maybe not represented or there aren't people that look like you. And my thing is, just build your own table, you know? Just create your own thing, create your own tradition. Don't let any perceived barriers deter you. And it's pretty much what we've done. We've just gone out and created our own.
You've made it happen. You have absolutely made it happen.
So, that gives us a lot of confidence. And also, I think one of the things that I did, and I would tell my younger self to keep doing, is to just keep exploring the world. I did a lot of traveling extensively. I was fortunate to travel through work all over the world. And on my own time, I traveled. And I think that just gave me an openness to culture, to people.
Perspective.
So a lot of the values that we have, and it's actually rooted to our family values. Both Paul and I come from big, loving families, all about keeping people connected, and that's always been part of our home life, and I hope it shows up in our business life as well and how we engage with the public.
Well, I absolutely think it does, and I think that's part of the reason you've been so successful so far and will continue to be a success. Jason, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you,
for catching up, and because we have met before at another event, but it was nice to properly catch up with you and have a good chat about the business and you and Paul and the family, and every success for going forward. And if I'm going to take a bottle of rum with me, which one would you recommend?
Oh my goodness, that's like choosing between your children. How can I do that?
Oh, that's a really interesting analogy.
What are we going to go for? Well, it's staring at us. Matuga spice.
I feel a Matuga is, having heard the history of the town and the and the plantation and everything, that sounds...
The Matuga spice, it's masala chai infused rum with some Scottish honey. It's really nice with some chocolate truffles. What's not to love?
What's not to love? Jason, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Our Women Entrepreneurs is supported by the Royal Bank of Scotland, providing accredited specialist support for women in business today and every day in the form of free help, expertise and guidance. Whether you want to chat with one of the local enterprise managers, are interested in the Accelerator programme, or would benefit from a mentor session on the Women in Business mentoring platform Mentor Match, go to rbs.co.uk/business and search Women in Business to find out more. Meanwhile, keep an eye and an ear out for the next episode of Our Women Entrepreneurs on Mic'd Up, coming soon. Thanks for listening.